Engaging Conversation, 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. I want to say good morning to Avi, and that song is I Ain't Going Home by the one and only Avi. Listen, I just need you all to know from this day forward, right? If you don't treat me like CEO Sam Bankman-Fried, if you don't treat me, then I ain't going home. There's grass on the lawn and ducks in the pond, and I don't need to go home for nothing but good treatment. Yeah? And that's what I want in my life. Good morning. It is Tuesday, the 26th of April, 2022, and you are on the clock with Erin Green. On the clock, we engage organizations, institutions, social and cultural leaders, and ordinary people to better understand the impact of public policy, private sector development, and emerging social and consumer trends. On the clock, we have conversations that help us understand and navigate a rapidly changing Bahamas. In fact, I want to put a word out there today. Look to your partner and tell them this relationship can't go forward no more unless you treat me like Sam Bankman-Fried is treat himself. And like the government of the Bahamas is prepared to treat him. That's all I'm saying. You got to want more. Believe in yourself. Know your worth and know your value. We're going to get into that in a moment. I want to say good morning to my guest co-host, Mr. Mark Palmer.
Good morning.
Now, I just want to say to the audience that nothing that I say here today can be attributed to Mr. Palmer or anybody he is affiliated with. This is all my own foolishness that I am running on with today. I got a text here, dead quick, that says, great show as usual, Miss Green. Question, are you going to regard, in which regard are you considered to be the best? You are free to be biased on your selection. But listen, I'm from New Providence. I grew up in Montague Harbor. Ooh. I learned to swim, to bubble, to not drown, to run on water in Montague Harbor. So I guess the Montague Harbor regarded as the best of the best. They're going to be my favorite one. But the one that comes accompanied with free tickets and comp meals and room and board, that will be my favorite. Trust me. You send that one to me, that could be my favorite. But we got a little bit of local things to talk about before we get into some global news, which I think is very exciting this morning. If you look on the front of today's Guardian, on the bottom half of the fold, you'll see an article entitled, Water Corporation Will Handle Disconnections Humanely. I just want to, let's put a pin right here. Are we still in the middle of a pandemic, a health crisis? Are we still in the middle of a crisis where the biggest mitigating factor, is that the term? The biggest strategy, the biggest tool to reduce the spread of said disease is sanitation. Is being able to wash your hands regularly. It's having regular, unfettered, uninterrupted access to potable, that's drinkable, and clean water. Why are we disconnecting water at this time? And why you feel the need to use the word humanely? As soon as you feel the need to use the word humanely, it makes me feel like something inhumane is about to happen.
Suspicious. It makes you suspicious when they have to put those kind of words in, right?
Yes. I don't know how to feel about that. Anyway, I just want to stick a pin there because I need you all to know, when you see people like me walking around a place like we got this biggity attitude, like we believe we is the best in the world, that's because we grew up in this country in an era where we believe the Bahamas and everything that came out of it to be the best, but based on some very simple things, you know. One of them is universal access to education, that our people and our government, as not a reflection, but as the conveyors of our desires, determine that we will have universal access to education. If you hear, you get an education, because all children need an education for a life free of violence, for the best chance to develop, right? Universal access to water. It don't matter how you get here or what conditions you live in, you will have access to water. Those are the things that made the Bahamas great. And universal access to healthcare. Those are the three things that made young Bahamians like myself feel like we were superstars. We were heroes among in the midst of the rest of the world and global politics and economics. This is madness. So when I look up at a paper and I see a picture of Mr. Bankman-Fried in, I want to say, perhaps the cutest short set I've ever seen at a prime ministerial event, even though it was in Machin. Right? It made me think.
Who was wearing shorts?
Oh, the CEO of FTX, the founder and CEO, okay. Sam Bankman-Fried. I mean, I'm sure the flyer said business casual, and this boy say, hold my beer. Let me show them what casual looks like. But when you have that amount of money.
You don't need to follow the rules, right?
Right. You don't really need to follow the rules. And so if you saw me today, Mark, with my bag of tamarind, mm-hmm. I made a big mistake. I was giving out tamarind like I was a boss this morning, right? Mm-hmm. Because I was going to go use that tamarind to go pay for my ticket for the FTX conference.
You need a lot of tamarind
for that. No, why are you laughing at me, Mark? Why are you making fun?
You're going to need a couple of truckloads of tamarind for that.
That is, if you don't understand the value of tamarind in the global economy.
So how much is it a pound? Seriously.
Well, I can show you real talk.
$3 a pound?
See, that's what you're saying. Like, you still making fun of me, Mark. I'm going to show you all something right now that will, what the young folks say, stand your head up. Pre-pandemic, Rasta was getting between $12 and $14 a pound.
Whoa.
For tamarind. On the side of the road.
That means you only need 500 pounds to go to the conference.
I mean, that's what you think. Your math is off. I prefer a more sophisticated style of math. We call it PLP math. I'm going to teach you that. They don't teach nothing in the Ministry of Education, but I can teach you that. And that's what I thought I was going to do with my tamarind. Okay. But you know what's more valuable than a ticket to this FTX conference? Watching Bahamians who haven't had tamarind in maybe a whole year.
Get excited when you come around, yeah.
When they could get some tamarind.
And it soothed the savage beast this morning.
Yeah, it soothed me, definitely. But it's good for you. It's a liver conditioner. So we're in this, we're coming off the winter season, and now we're in this fruit blossom season. Everything has been blossoming. And with the high winds, all of those allergens are now in the air. Silk cotton, sea grape, flowering plants, sour sop, cherry, all of them. And so the tamarind is great right now for people who drink a lot of bush medicine. Now, if you're drinking bush medicine, I hope you're talking to your doctor as well. If you're not talking to your doctor, I hope you're drinking it in moderation. Mm. Whatever you're doing, you should have a piece of tamarind regularly when you're drinking a lot of bush medicine.
And that's to cleanse your liver?
Right.
Gotcha.
It's a good digestive tool as well. Anyway, so I got on a tamarind expedition because there's still plenty of tamarind on the tree. A lot of tamarind has not been harvested. And we could still catch them before the rains hit. If we could catch them before the rains hit, then we could have a good supply of tamarind throughout the year. Now, I know you're all saying, look, Aaron, it's the end of April. It's almost May. What are you doing talking about tamarind? Well, two things. The seasons have changed. They're shifting slowly. Mm. If you don't believe me, I was shelling some tamarind yesterday, and I had two swellies, which means that they were just half ripe. They weren't fully ripe yet, which means we still have some young tamarind on the tree. Please get out there and pick the tamarind. Now, people who are serious about selling and buying tamarind are typically buying at 75 cents a pound and selling at $1 a pound, roughly. But when you see what Rasta was making, between $12 and $16, $14 a pound, and you see what savvy, sophisticated homemakers and small business vendors can do with tamarind, tamarind balls, tamarind sauce, tamarind pepper, tamarind pancake syrup, tamarind rum finger. The list goes on. Tamarind pepper spread for your meats and your fish, tamarind salad dressing. Yeah, tamarind seeds for gelatin when you ain't got no gelatin out
there. So who sells this stuff? Because
I mean, I can't tell you what I sell. I can only talk about it in the radio in an education fashion. Bingo. But you can find these things at the farmer's market. You can hit me up off air because I can't advertise my thing, my business, right?
Gotcha,
but
yeah, all right.
They're out there in the market. They're out there at the farmer's market. Hit Cowpen Road. Hit a farm. Hit vendors you know who do this stuff regularly and ask them, what's happening? Where's the tree? How can I help you make sure that you have tamarind sauce and tamarind balls year-round when I really want it and when the tourists really want it? But I tell you, I got to go out on an exploration. So I was looking for tamarind on Village Road, and I discovered this new, I don't know what to call it.
Are you talking about the big tree, the big tamarind tree, which is halfway up Village Road?
Oh, well, thank you for reminding me about that. What I'm going to do is I'm going to inquire with the owners of the property that that tree sits on.
Okay.
Another plan is to just sit in the road and wait for tamarind to drop in the road, you know. But I ain't got that kind of time. But I can find the owners and see if we could harvest that. There are a couple of other huge trees in the eastern area that could do with a good cleaning. But I was on Village Road looking for tamarind trees, and I found out about the new Village Road Cave Exploration Adventure Center. It is right between QC and BNT. Have you ever been spelunking in your car, Mark?
No.
You ain't never fallen a big hole in Nassau in your car?
I got lost in a cave in Eleuthera.
On foot?
Yeah, we
Preacher's
we
went, Cave?
No, it wasn't Preacher's. It's the one down just south of Governor's.
Yeah.
It's a huge cave. We went in and we didn't bring our flashlights, died when we got halfway through, about 20 minutes in.
You had BPL flashlights.
So the only way we got out, my son had a little watch that you could press a button on it and it illuminated it, so that allowed us to get out.
Yeah.
And we were wearing flip-flops, so feet were cut up. So, you know, women are so much better, right? They'd be much more prepared. We just went, oh, let's go look in the cave.
Yeah.
But that was incredible. That's an incredible cave. That we were in there for 20 minutes and then got lost and then had to walk 20 minutes back.
Wow. That was fun.
Yeah, that was fun.
I mean, and then once you got you found an alternate light and you know you're going to be okay.
You could have got out because there's only one way out, but it does split. So, you know.
Yeah.
Could have gone terribly wrong.
Anything spooky happened while you were in there?
Nothing there. All I remember, my boys grabbing me by both my hands.
They wanted to make sure you were safe. Yeah. They said, Pops, we are not scared. We're going to make sure
exactly,
you're safe.
Exactly, yeah.
Absolutely. It's an important story, though, for a couple of reasons. Some videographers, amateur journalists, were out there. I think somebody's car hit one part of the construction zone or the work zone. And it turns out that the road wasn't properly lit for a work site. I mean, the road is never properly lit. It's a problem. But this is reminiscent of the Munnings Road tragedy.
Yeah.
Right? And I can't imagine that we've gotten back here. It's not because of the attention to detail that, you know, it's not because we have this focus on attention to detail. It's not about a commitment to protecting and serving the Bahamian people. That's not what it is. It's because HGTV is selling so much house on Village Road. HGTV have the best drones in the world. How could you let Village Road, your tourism money maker, your second home market money maker? You see, we know you don't care about the poor black people. We get that. That's plantation living. But what about the mechanisms you say are so important that you sort of have to ignore your obligation to me to make sure you could do that? Right? See, we got it. All the beautiful housing available in that wonderful zone and district, right?
Mm-hmm.
We understand that a large number of expatriates, right? That's what you call fancy documented migrants of a certain hue. Live in that area. We've made it available to them, right? So we could get the best rents to schools and to businesses so we could get the best rents. while people are still struggling, living in cars with multiple children. So we understood why you wanted, you know, focus on the second home ownership in this beautiful area where many of us who went to QC and lived in that area, we can't afford to live there no more. How could you let Village Road get in that state? You in charge of our money. Maybe that's how we have to treat you. Maybe we have to take on that very negative, stereotypical, I don't even want to say it. It's reckless to say it on radio, but maybe we have to take on that vibe. Go get our money. Pay attention to the details. You're not going to ignore us, obfuscate or confuse your obligation to the citizen, right? The way that you're doing this, well, you know, we have to keep tourism alive so that we can get paid. That thing you do, we can't put Band-Aids in the clinic. We can't make sure the phones are working in the clinic because we got to keep tourism alive. Take care of it then. You're slunking too much. Anyway, I'm inspired. You know what, Mark? I'm going to go buy me a short set. I almost come in here in my pajamas this morning, you know. I want that good bank. I want that good FTX treatment. Anyway, on to another topic. I was supposed to talk about BTC tech services because they've been intermittent. Mm. I think that's a polite word, all weekend. That's what I called it. I thought maybe it was just me. BTC, WhatsApp helpline, telephone helpline, online helpline. None of them were available on the weekend. BTCBahamas.com is up and down, intermittent access.
Wow.
You could pay your bill. It's like when they sense the intention to pay your bill, it's up. When they sense the intention to complain, it's no way.
Maybe there's an algorithm.
They can't afford an algorithm. Mark, you're making fun of me today. They can't afford an algorithm. Anyway, so I got to ask these questions very quickly. Does BTC still offer Sunday tech support? Do you offer that at all online, WhatsApp, digital? Can you buy AI? Could you invest in a bot to do that? Do you no longer have 24-hour tech and customer service support? Is that only if you want to buy things? You all need to do better because... you know, the only people you could talk to when you use the helpline is our Caribbean counterparts, whose job it is to sell us services. And so when that's the only person you could talk to, you have to lodge your complaint with them, hoping that they can forward it to the correct local office.
Well, I remember when I used to be a BTC customer years ago, the only way you could get through was ring sales.
Yeah.
Because they would pick up and then they'd put you through to
yeah.
customer inquiry.
It's still the same.
But it has changed, right? It's better. It has to be better. Than back in the day.
Only because I don't like air silence, Mark. I've been staring at you. But so I do have this note to make, BTC. I am fair. I am not unfair. So at 10:05, sensing that I was going to talk about this on the radio, I got a notice in my BTC message box saying, and I'm going to read it, dear BTC customer, we apologize for the inconvenience on service on Sunday the 24th. As a compensation, we have allocated on your balance 500 megabytes of data valid today.
You better start using your phone, right?
Yeah, I need That's to use today. That 500 megabytes today.
Right.
Listen, I just want to say we want to thank you for the apology, BTC. It's not sufficient. It's not detailed enough. And certainly you have not outlined your solution to ensure that this doesn't happen again. You haven't actually told us what happened, you know? So we need more information. Okay, I still have some more things, Mark, but we got to get into our topic. So here's what we're going to do. It's 10:29. I am going to read off the rest of the topics, get to the text line, because when we come back from this break, producer, we're going in full steam ahead with our global news conversation. So another thing I wanted to talk about. Well, back to FTX for a second. Can I really pay my bills in cryptocurrency? This is what I thought I heard the government talking about. But every time I hear the Minister of Works talking, it seems like he's selling cryptocurrency as opposed to teaching them people how to patch hole on Village Road. I digress. But can I pay my bills now in cryptocurrency? And who can pay their bills in cryptocurrency? And what happens if a big international somebody paid a bill in cryptocurrency and it turned out they, like, can your check bounce in cryptocurrency? That's what I'm concerned about.
No, it can't. But the thing is, what I find interesting is sort of at the high end, there's a lot of discussion on crypto.
Yeah.
But at the lower end, you know, the kind of the average person, there's still very low uptake on crypto. I think it's like 1 or 2% even in a place like the States. Mm-hmm. So what about education? You know, educating about crypto rather than charging a conference right. for the elites to come and, right. and make the, policy.
The government's going to need a very sophisticated education campaign because sort of prior to the introduction of FTX, I was seeing notices saying, reminding us that we're not allowed to trade cryptocurrency and you're not allowed to hold crypto assets and a whole bunch of stuff. And there's been a significant change in
so
policy
what crypto,
and outlook.
So what cryptocurrencies are you allowed to pay in? The sand
well,
dollar?
This is what I...
Is it just a sand dollar or is it? Can you pay in Bitcoin and other coins?
Well, no, I don't think the sand dollar is a cryptocurrency. I think the sand dollar
is
a digital currency, which is slightly different.
It's still on blockchain, but centralized control. But
right. And Bitcoin doesn't have centralized control, right?
Right.
And that's the part that I'm worried about with paying the bill. Because what if a savvy pirate like myself, if I know that the value of the Bitcoin is going to drop at 12 p.m. today, well, I am paying my bill in Bitcoin at 9 a.m. today so that I pay you with that currency at that high value, and I've gotten mm-hmm. rid of it before it loses value, and now you have it, and it's lost value. I don't have no insurance. I ain't even sure if I have life insurance or health insurance at this point. But I could add up 1 and 5, and that don't make PLP. It just don't. Anyway, I'm very concerned about that. But another thing that I wanted to mention that I know that we haven't seen in the media locally is a very tragic story. I just want to mention it, and I think it's worth noting. On Earth Day, a very tragic thing happened. A climate activist, Mr. Wynn Allen Bruce, he set himself on fire outside of the Supreme Court, I think in D.C., mm-hmm. in the U.S. It was a statement, and some people say a protest against the ignoring, you know, climate change. And some people would say it's a demonstration of the ultimate sacrifice for the sake of the future.
Incredible. I mean, it's very rare, though. I mean, I think it's the second case.
I
heard there was something, maybe 2018, somebody else did the same thing. But can you imagine taking that choice, a healthy person, to take their own life to protest against something? That's incredible.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so the last case...
Well, some people say crazy, right?
Right.
Whichever way you look at it, it's still an incredible thing to do.
Yeah. Absolutely, and we're not encouraging that, and we're certainly going to say that if anybody is thinking of self-harming themselves, or if you know someone who is, you reach out to the social services hotline, to the crisis center.
Yeah, hotline. Well, you know, hunger strikes are another way of, you know, mm-hmm. and people have died. I remember back in the day when the IRA, I think Bobby Sands, he died on a hunger strike. He was an IRA terrorist. Mm-hmm. And so that's another... I heard there's somebody on a hunger strike here in Nassau, but I'm trying to get the details on it. Somebody's on a hunger strike about something. I'll have to dig into that. Maybe we'll talk about it next week
Absolutely.
If it's true.
But I just want to make this note to all of my Bahamians, is particularly to young people, right? Listen, there's nothing that this government could do to cause us to self-immolate, okay? We don't rate them that much. We have better solutions and strategies. And if you're a young person and you are so frustrated with the state of affairs in your country, you come find me. Reach out to me. Reach out to me. You don't have to rest with me. You don't have to rest your burden with me, but I will find somebody that you are comfortable talking to. We're not going to let this lack of integrity, lack of spatial awareness, lack of decency, we're not going to let that destroy us psychologically, emotionally, and spiritually, okay? We just, and you could sit here, I'm 45, I've been watching it, I know how you feel, but we're not going to do that. We're going to take our energies and we're going to turn towards each other, turn it into each other and support each other face. That's what we're going to do. But I really wanted to mention that story. Another story, Nicaragua pull out of the OAS.
Yeah, that's something, eh?
The Organization of American States.
That's an interesting one. And Nicaragua has an interesting history as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So let me get to this text line.
I mean, are there any countries in the world where the husband and wife are the prime minister and the vice, I think his wife is the vice premier of that country? Are you aware of any other country? That sounds like almost like one of these Russian, Kazakhstan type of...
U.S. with Bill Clinton and Hillary.
Yeah, she wasn't vice president.
I mean...
Maybe she was the secret vice president.
I mean, and then with Reagan and Nancy. But that's not the sort of setup you're thinking about.
Which is, anyone would say that's a conflict of interest, right?
Right.
You have a
why? Why is it a conflict of interest?
Well, say for example, you're a nonprofit and you have a president and you have the treasurer.
Uh-huh.
As a both, and you need two signatures to make and the president and the treasurer have that right. Would be a governance issue. And I would imagine it could be. I'm not saying it is,
but it could be.
It would certainly raise eyebrows.
Absolutely.
How that could happen.
Because men love to say, I just do what my wife says and you know it. Don't pressure her.
She's probably the power behind the throne, right?
Right. That's interesting. I think it is... in St. Vincent and the Grenadines, where Ralph, because I'm going to admit this right now, I don't pronounce his name properly, no matter how much I try, and I think it's his son. There's a Caribbean state where the father was the prime minister and the son was the minister of finance, which I think is a similar conflict. Because the son is always, he's a Caribbean boy, I do what my daddy tell me. Mm-hmm. I don't like licks.
Mm-hmm.
it could be a big conflict. I see another, thank you for mentioning that. There's another conflict I wanted to talk about. I don't know if it's a conflict. Let me rephrase that. First of all, let me say that Mark had nothing to do with the framing of this inquiry. Second of all, I don't know if it's a conflict or if it represents a conflict of interest, but I want to ask the questions because I think we should determine whether the situation represents a conflict of interest. So... Sebas Bastian, CEO of Island Luck, is also the non-resident ambassador to the Central America Integration System.
What does that mean?
So that is the economic and political system of governance. It's sort of like, I guess it's like almost like a political and economic federation without actually becoming a federation of states like the United States of America, right? I think that's what it is.
It would only be a conflict if his business interests in some way, he would get an advantage with his business interests having that position. That would be a conflict, but it may not be, you'd have to prove that, right?
Right. And so there was this video floating around, and I should have known something was up. It's a video of Sebas being interviewed of Mr. Bastian being interviewed in Belize. About the introduction of some new features in a company called Belize Luck, which I imagine he was the CEO of or partner holder of. Now, I did some research online last night, and I couldn't find any clear indication that Mr. Bastian remains CEO of Belize Luck, or whether he has any economic or business interests in Belize, right? So I couldn't determine that with certainty last night. But if he does, and Belize is a part of this system, does that represent a conflict of interest?
Well, we have had a history of conflicts of interest in the past, right?
Right.
Now, I can't remember the exact names, but I remember one previous administration, there were several appointments where there were complete conflict.
Yeah. And I'm not certain that we can avoid all conflicts, right, of interest in the small island developing state, in the region, the Caribbean and Latin America, Central American region. I don't think we can avoid them. But my real question is, why does it seem like the political class keeps ignoring the fact that we need mechanisms to manage conflicts of interest? And why do they refuse to engage the existing mechanisms to manage conflicts of interest? What I thought about yesterday was that I call it rhetoric. some people call it sound strategy, but I call it rhetoric. This line that's why you need a businessman to run a country. You got to treat a country like a business, mm-hmm. right? I don't think that all of the rules that apply to business can be applied to governance. And this may be a manifestation of one of those things.
Well, I know in the States, you know, when Biden had his son had these interests in Ukraine, you know, that was perceived as a potential conflict of interest because yeah. there were also some sanctions that were about to be levied. And there were, so I think it's a very tricky thing. You yeah. know? And I think as long as you say, as long as they're brought up front, it may not necessarily be a bad thing. You just have to recuse yourself from specific discussions right. that would include your interest, right?
But
because it happens all the time. Like you're saying, we can't avoid it in a small community. But when they're blatant mm-hmm. and there's no attempt to explain or explain away the potential conflict, that's where the problem lies.
Right. And at what point do you have so much money that conflict just can't be avoided? Or is it that the way that the world looks at it now is, how much money do you have to the point where conflict doesn't matter anymore? Right? Like, can I be so rich that the rules don't apply to me? And listen, I just want to know there, Mr. Friedman, where'd you get that short set? I like that. That casual short set. I like that. I want that. I really want that. Anyway.
All right.
Sorry about that, Mark. Text here says, the conference was already sold out. Locals need not apply, apparently. Okay, so watch this. Like, technically, I'm not upset that the thing sold out. I'm upset that there is no real space for Bahamians in it. And there are two things that I'm concerned about, like sort of two things on the fringe that potentially could manifest, right? This young person, I don't know where they come across being so smart and savvy, but they were like, you know what? This crypto thing feel like the 80s, right? That's what the 80s felt like, right? He's like the 80s all over again, eh? I'm very concerned about that. Right, about a lack of regulation in such a new market and sort of inability to look forward to the cutting edge and forecast potential issues. That is a big concern for me. And the second concern is that we sort of create this plantation model all over again where you're in the Bahamas and Bahamas are connected to the project but not in any real substantive way. And no channels are being carved out to ensure the continual participation of Bahamians. I don't know. That was on my mind all night. I joke. Tamron was on my mind all night. All night. So let me get to the text line. Why, thank you. Thank you, texter. Glad you're listening in Miami. Another text. Is there a sinkhole or did they dig the hole? So they're doing construction. Mm-hmm. And it's a massive project going on. And I think without proper road coverage while the road was exposed, a water main may have been broken. And that leaking of water caused a sinkhole to develop with the weight of cars coming over it. I thought you all would have put one little mobile radio meter detector. So even if you weren't on the site, you could tell whether a leak had happened or you would be checking the site regularly to determine mm-hmm. what was happening there. Anyway, another text. Great show as usual. You said, as usual, the disconnecting water because it's a new day, leaving water on. So people who like to bathe is the old day. You said the man set himself on fire to prove a point, Miss Green. That's fire. What point could he possibly be proving? You know, fire hot, right? Listen, we don't want to go down this road. Because really, we want to sort of respect his dignity, you know, and divinity. Yeah. But we're going to talk about that one day. That's a political talk. It's a political talk. You all hear that sweet music? That means it's time to go to mm-hmm. a break. Thank you, producer. Thank you. When we come back from the break, listen, I started the Tamron talk for a reason. I still have time. We still have time. We still have enough Tamron to beat Twitter, beat Musk. In his attempt to buy Twitter, we still have time. People, go get your tamarinds and your mangoes. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Hey, hey, hey. Why you messing around? A woman on
how important collecting your money can be to the success of your business. Start your relationship with Fidelity today so that we can show you the many options available to you with our merchant services, from click and pay options online to merchant terminals and e-commerce options. We're here to help your business succeed. For more details, speak to one of our business development officers at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit our website at fidelitygroup.com or visit any of our branches.
Like what you're hearing on the show? Want to support the conversation? Sponsor On the Clock today. Call Janet Lees at 302-2304. That's 302-2304. Be the solution. Sponsor On the Clock with Erin Green, where she dissects, we discuss, and you decide.
Throughout our lifetime, we must all make decisions. No matter how we choose, the right one just needs to be made. Like having J.S. Johnson Insurance Agents and Brokers as your insurance partner. We've been serving the Bahamas for over 100 years. Whether you need home, motor, marine, or commercial insurance, make the right decision. Call 397-2100 or visit jsjohnson.com.
J.S. Johnson Insurance.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Tell them I didn't mean it. Come tell me by ducks in the corn. These gals all jelly grass on my lawn. And let me tell you one thing.
Good morning, morning, morning. Welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. Mark, okay, I talk too much, but that's because he was making fun of me.
Yeah.
He was cracking joke on me. So the two top sort of international stories are the Nicaragua closes the OAS office, and that's because of the proximity to the Bahamas. And the potential to impact the Bahamas. I don't think the Bahamas is going to pull out of the OAS, not at the government level.
Why would they?
Right.
Yeah, it's probably unlikely, isn't
it? Yeah. But I still think it's an important story. But something that everybody is talking about is Twitter agreed. They accepted Musk's bid.
Right, yeah.
And now they're just waiting for stakeholders to weigh in with their decision, whether they're going to let Musk. And so the vibe is that Musk wants to buy it, and Elon Musk is the owner of Twitter, him one. Not Tesla, not his company. Elon Musk is the owner and makes all the decisions about Twitter. Well, I get the first most important question is this, Mark. Is he paying with cash? Is he paying, first of all, let me start before that. Is he paying all one time? Is he paying the whole $45 billion one time? Because I just want to say, dear Twitter board, I know a Bahamian, and I would not take that deal. If he ain't paying all one time, don't take it.
Yeah, he's going to pay that all one time. And they're getting a nice premium over the share price, what it was at the 1st of April. I think it's like 36% up. Boom. So we'll see. But it's not. The more important thing is, you know, what this means for Twitter going forward, and there's a lot of controversy around that.
$45 billion just to go buy Twitter.
He's worth nearly $300 billion. They reckon that's the profitable value of Tesla alone.
They say estimated net worth of $273 billion
and rising.
Right, because this boy is making money by the minute.
What I like about him, he's a maverick, and he's also very straightforward. You know, he doesn't, he says what he says, you know, he doesn't beat around the bush. So I know they're Elon Musk detractors, but I always value his freshness. If anyone just go on a YouTube interview with him, it's just really refreshing to listen to him talk about stuff, and not in a way that is also cautious, because he's an engineer and he's always looking at problems down the line. And so he's bringing an engineering idea to Twitter now. He's looking at it from a different perspective.
Right, because what I've been getting from people is that, okay, we recognize that he's on the spectrum, so his style of engagement may be a little off-putting. But people were really sort of playing him like a dunce, like this boy, you know, like he smokes too much marijuana, man. He's just the money in the marijuana, and he doesn't make any sense. But you're saying that he does.
And he did host Saturday Night Live. Did you ever see that? He actually hosted that show. So he's done some weird stuff.
I in the spot 242. We don't watch Saturday Night Live. We inspire Saturday Night Live, man. Real comedy. Yeah. But anyway, you're saying that he does bring a degree of spatial awareness from a different discipline.
Very different. But he's also very pro-free speech. And that's what I like about it. Because the problem about Twitter, it is a really important institution because it's a de facto public square where people get to voice their competing views. But what's happened over the last 2 years, or maybe a little bit more, is that one side has been completely suppressed. Mm-hmm. And one of his concerns is that there's a couple of concerns. One's the algorithm. How do some people get removed or shadow ghosted and other people don't?
Right.
And that's secret. Nobody knows how that's done. We have an idea because Twitter was hacked back in 2020, and they posted the engineering platform, which showed that a person could just delete an account just by pressing a button. So it could be simply somebody makes a call and says, we don't want this, because something suspicious happened. Do you remember back in 2020, there was a company called Zero Hedge? They wrote an article about the lab link theory, or suggesting the possibility, which in FOIA request emails, they found that Fauci and Collins had flagged in their internal discussions that on the day after Zero Hedge was deleted from Twitter. Now, you could say that's a coincidence, or did, you know, an organization contact the board or whoever it is at Twitter and say, we want this deplatform? And there's clear indication there's the algorithm is called a black box algorithm, so he wants to make it public so we can see it's completely accountable, who's getting deleted, why they're getting deleted or suppressed. I think that's a really good thing for democracy, because I think certainly over the last few years with the pandemic, we haven't really had open discussion about the pandemic. There was clearly one predominant point of view. Mm-hmm. And and to be able to solve problems, we need to have open discussions. But particularly on science, that's how science works. It gets challenged. But if you're not allowed to challenge science, that's propaganda. And so there's a lot of thought around that. And so I think it's a good thing. He's going to look at that relationship between Twitter and the government, which doesn't sound very good to me. You know, why should the government be directly working with this important organization and Facebook as well?
Well, see, now I would have thought the government should work with them to ensure fairness, decency. Well, it's free speech. Decency sort of goes out the window. But fairness and equitable access.
Well, that's...
But I don't know if governments are looking at themselves as having the duty to protect and fulfill citizens' needs versus having a duty to preserve and protect government.
I think there's a balance. Actors. You see, I understand that is a part of that whole equation, but there is a balance. And the feeling is it's gone too far the other way, that these platforms like Twitter are being used for political purposes. And, I mean, you got to be fair with the Republicans. They see... it's been of an immense benefit to the Democrats, the election of Biden, when they suppressed the Hunter Biden laptop, and that was totally suppressed and embargoed. And so I can see Republicans being pretty upset about that, because there was there was a poll which now says that if people had known about the Hunter Biden laptop, 16% would have voted, would not have voted Democrat. Now, we could have a Republican government in power now because something was actively suppressed.
Or even better, we could have possibly seen a third party.
Right, exactly.
Peek their nose out into the race.
So I think he wants a level playing field, and that would fundamentally take Twitter back to its roots. And I think that's a really good thing. Now, when he says something, he usually does it. So he'll say, I'm doing this, and then bingo, a year later, it comes to fruition. There's no hyperbole in the matter.
Now, you say that, right? But there's this talk that Elon Musk went to the UN and said, look here, what y'all dealing with? Let's solve world hunger, man. He's like, give me the budget and give me a plan, and we're going to do it. And so, the rumor mills are saying that the UN gave him the plan, and then he turned around and decided to buy Twitter. Like, he didn't follow through with that. But other people are saying that the UN actually thought he's joking and told him, stop joking, buddy. Go do something else. Carry on smiling.
I don't think he ever jokes.
No. Well, that's the thing.
Because he has that Asperger's side to him. Now, I'm not an expert. We aren't. But there's clearly something about that condition that makes him very different.
And what I've seen is it's methodical.
And incredibly focused.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like it's almost like a mathematician's brain, right? Like, it's just wild. Beautifully wild. Right? Beautifully wild thing. But I got a couple more concerns about this purchase, right? First thing is this. I saw this tweet saying that Elon Musk said, as soon as I buy Twitter, I'm banning anybody who says them boys on this platform, right? And so my anti-racist, anti-capitalist back jumped up. Yeah. I haven't found the tweet. I haven't found the tweet on the platform itself. I haven't found anything to substantiate that. So initially, my concern was that we would see less free speech if he purchased, right? But you think that it's safe to say, if he says, listen, one of the reasons I'm buying this is to restore that fundamental principle of the app, that we can sort of trust that.
Of democratic, yeah, right. a fair democratic process. And he has actually gone and said that. I saw a hilarious tweet when he was arguing about, you know, Twitter and how it lost its way. And somebody posted, why don't you buy it? And his next tweet was, well, how much?
Yeah.
It was like, and boom, and then it must have sparked his imagination. Right. Off he went.
And so I want to say, we've seen in the Tribune that Aeropost, co-owned by Mr. Bastian, had a data breach, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's been in the news, right? And two things that sort of make me think about both of these people at the same time, Twitter and Sebas Bastian. Will Sebas start his own regional platform? Because you got to have money. I mean, you got to be mega rich. And that's why I thought of the two of you all together, Mr. Bastian, that's all. You think Sebas would start a regional Twitter-like platform, which I think would be really interesting, especially with a lot of people saying, oh, they're going to leave Twitter if Musk buys it. Another thing is, do you think that Musk will monetize, like that you'll have to pay to access Twitter or premium services on Twitter? Do you think that this purchase and the way that he's purchased it, like the culture within its purchase, may result in this sort of space where there's free speech once you could get on the platform, but you're really disadvantaged by whether you can afford to get on the platform or not?
It's a very good question. I'm not sure whether he would tamper with the sort of the fundamental ethos of Twitter. I think he will improve it. You know, the first thing, you know, can you have an edit button? But there are issues with an edit button.
Yeah.
You know, particularly if you tweet and you have lots of people responding, and then you change the tweet and it's a different connotation. Suddenly you've got all these likes, but they're liking something that had been changed. So there's things he's got to work out. But he's really open. He's a problem solver, and he's looking. One of the things he always said, it talks about solutions. You know, that these platforms like Twitter, they try and solve something, and when they don't quite solve it, they just keep going. Mm-hmm. So that's very symptomatic of government. When he wants to solve something, he doesn't stop till it's actually solved. And if it isn't solved, then he'll do something else. And so I'm hoping he's going to bring that to him. So I'm optimistic. Maybe I'm naive, but I'm optimistic that it'll be a good thing. You know, people will leave Twitter. I left Facebook because they were, you know, I was mentioning certain words that weren't supposed to be mentioned, and my posts were being, you know, deleted.
I can teach you how to be a good revolutionary, man, Mark. You're, first of all, you're like, talk too much about how you feel. You eat your feelings sometimes.
But so I left, you know, so I just, okay, I can't, it's not an open platform, so I'm not interested in sharing my views anymore. But they're so big. Maybe 1% of people leave, but then it's, you know. Yeah. So to answer your question, I don't think a regional Twitter platform would work. I can't see how it would work. What are you competing against? You know, particularly if Twitter is going to improve, there are other platforms that are, you know, Trump started his own platform, right? But
if you ain't on Caribbean Twitter, you can't have imported mangoes. That's how we're gonna get them.
All right, yeah, you have to incentivize them.
Right, we all out of time. Next time you come, we got to talk about net neutrality, though, right? Because this is also, I think, this is an extension of that discussion.
Yeah.
Right, and it's something that I hope that people like Elon Musk with all the money in the world, and like Mr. Sam Bankman-Fried with perhaps plenty of the money in the world, think about in terms of where they invest their money and what are the types of cultures that they want to create, since they have the power to create new worlds in their hands.
They sure do. Yeah.
Anyway, Mr. Bankman-Fried, listen, we was only cracking jokes today. I'm glad you had a great time with the Prime Minister and crew. Tune in tomorrow for another exciting episode of On the Clock with Erin Green. I think I'm going to have Tennille Burrows. And if the plants are willing, Mr. Phil Davis Jr. will be joining us to answer all your plant-related questions. And then I got some interesting questions for the both of them, young people and agriculture. Anyway, thank you, Mr. Palmer, for joining me today.
Yeah, thank you.
You guys stay tuned. Guardian Radio AM is up next, then The Revolution, and then Z Live with Mr. Lang, and then Talking Heads with Naughty. You guys have a great, great, great day. A great day.
Boy, this Bush music sweet, eh? Let's go!